Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, author, theorist, and founder of Theseus Research, Carl Fang.
Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Jamila Guerra-Soto. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I feel like a kid. Actually, regarding the subject matter of tonight's show, I have been feeling like a kid ever since Mark suggested a while back that we have tonight's guest on the show. And he sent me his book, and I looked through the book, and at first glance, I understood practically nothing. At second glance, I still understood practically nothing. And for that reason, I felt like a kid. I couldn't remember the last time that I was experiencing something or looking at something where I didn't have a frame of reference or anything to base it on, like to say, I do know this, and I think I could figure this out. I can't remember the last time that happened. And kind of like that experience when you took your first college math class or maybe even high school physics or chemistry, and you got the textbook at the beginning of the year and you looked in it and you say, actually, that's the question. What did you say? Because it gave me an opportunity to think about, how do I feel at this moment? Because if you looked inside that book that first day of school and said, oh, I'll never figure this out. Or you might have said, oh, this is going to be so hard. What did you say? Or when you tried to figure out, what did you say? So did you say, or I didn't say, oh, I'm such an idiot for not knowing this, or I must be stupid. I didn't put myself down. I mean, obviously, it's not something I know. And this won't be something most people know. And I'm excited about that because I know enough to know there's something here many of us need to know. And that some people can pick it up and do something potentially really amazing with it. And so I'm excited to be having this conversation with probably one of the most brilliant minds on our planet at the moment, and also to try and get whatever we can get, because I do believe that even in the confusion of the moment, as long as we're not saying things, gosh, I'm so stupid, or I don't understand this at all, if we're just allowing the conversation to be had and take it as an opportunity for a couple things. And one of those could be, again, in the confusion, sometimes our brain opens up to a whole new world, which is interesting. I say that because it's really a whole new world. Our guest is going to take us, depending on how deep we go, into a world which we can't see and never experienced, or at least it's not obvious to us. And if we, as a world, were to, or our scientists and engineers and physicists and mathematicians were to take this work and put it into even more practice, we would be going into a whole new world for potentially the benefit of all of us. So there's one way to look at it. Another way is it's a humbling moment too. And in a way, at the very least, it's a reminder that we can't know everything, that we don't know everything, and that we all need each other.
We all need each other. That's a great way to kick this off. I am so excited and honored to have Carl on. And boy, has it put me in a headspace tonight, because this is such a full circle moment. Early in my career, I was blessed to be able to be put in the room, and usually the youngest kid in the room, with some really, really bright and heartful people, and Carl was one of those, not only one of those, but one of the most inspiring. And I would say that he very much inspired and shaped and molded a lot of the way that I see the world today, and a lot of the way my journey, you know, set forth. So to ponder looking backwards and to be able to talk about his newest book and what he's doing today is a really exciting moment.
So our episode, Mark, A Lifetime Journey Through Computation, Natural and Human. This is our episode 825. A lifetime, this is his lifetime of work, and it's your lifetime of your experience back then to today, and my lifetime of getting to feel like a kid again.
I think we're all going to get to feel like kids again tonight. This is great.
Okay. Well, and talk about we all need each other, because we all have, I believe, some piece of the puzzle, or I hope we do. I trust we do. And here's a piece that we could talk about today. Our interview guest is an author. He's an inventor at large and a renegade theorist. He has won many awards. He's been part of many projects, started many companies, invented many things. We have the pleasure of having Carl M. Fant on the show today. Welcome, Carl, to the Life Changers Show.
Thank you. That was some introduction.
Well, you are some person. I so enjoyed our conversation today. And I did enjoy going through the book, A Journey Through Computation, Natural and Human. And I have to potentially start with this question. How would you describe your childhood in that? Did you know some of this? Did you have a hint as to, oh, the world's not right and I have the answers? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And I didn't understand, you know, what we're talking about today in the book, but I did, as a child, decide I was going to be a theorist. I was going to be a nuclear physicist, and I was going to revolutionize physics.
Ah.
And this is about, I don't know, 13, 14.
Ah.
Don't we all say that as children?
maybe, yeah. But I remember it, and I, you know, acted on it, apparently. But, you know, and then I finally got to college, and I took some, you know, freshman physics classes and decided that wasn't it.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, knocked around for quite a while, you know. And I finally, my uncle was a surveyor, and he had one of the early Hewlett-Packard calculators, and he let me play with it and program it. And that's what converted me from physicist to computer scientist.
Carl, I'm glad you had your uncle, and I'm glad you had your calculator. Did a lot of people, did many people understand, or even be like, had the time or took the time to understand what you were talking about or thinking about?
Well, yeah, you after I started this particular project, right, is what you're talking about?
Yeah, I meant as a child, because I think you were talking
as a child.
This as a child.
No, nobody paid any attention to me. Not even my uncle. I wrote a program for this calculator that was a closure program that he asked me to write. And I used every last location, program location on the calculator, and did the calculation.
The fact that
I fit the calculation into the last memory location, you know, just, yeah, that was pretty exciting. I liked doing that. So I kind of got caught. Nobody paid any attention to me in terms of these ideas. You know.
We each have a way of having fun. So if you were having fun without calculator, then by all means. I'm glad you said that later on you found people that understand you. The interesting thing is it's a small subset of the population that can understand you. And then they have to be, I would think, visionaries, because from what I understand, what you have been sharing for many years was ahead of its time then and is potentially still ahead of its time. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. So I started out trying to make this practical, right? I founded companies trying to make products and so forth. And the first company, Theseus Logic, it was done pretty well. We were making progress. We were making a lot of chips to demonstrate the technology, and we were even doing some face-offs with a Motorola chip, right? Motorola designed a clock chip, and we designed a version, that was not clocked. And we kind of won that competition. But then, circumstances reared their head. The dot-com bubble burst, investment money dried up. We didn't hire the right kind of CEO and so forth. And, then it all fell apart.
It was quite a roller coaster, but a game-changing technology, and gives me an opportunity to give a shout out to Eric Alterman also, because I wouldn't have met Carl or been involved in Theseus and other projects without Eric. So this is where the walk down memory lane gets fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, speaking of fun, I certainly have fun in the human aspects of this and what you're thinking, and I'd like to come back to this. However, the part that made me feel like a kid, Carl, let's share with some people, if we will. We titled the episode of the show a Lifetime Journey Through Computation, Natural and Human, and of course that's A Journey Through Computation, your books, your latest book. So the natural and human aspect, natural, you're talking about DNA, and human, you're talking about how we use computing. So if you could give us like a 5-minute overview and we'll grab what we can.
Okay. Well, the journey started back when I was looking at the notion of the algorithm and decided it just made no sense whatever. And my first published article was a criticism of the notion of the algorithm. It says basically that a computation is a sequence of steps, precisely defined steps, and it always ends and it always gives the same answer, which is a particularly vapid statement, because what's a step? How do you precisely define a step? How do you figure out a sequence of steps? And why does it have to end, and so forth. So anyway, my first published article was about that. And then that evolved into looking just at sequentiality and, the way computers were built and the computer theory worked. And what I noticed was that the whole theory ignored a particular primitivity, which is concurrency. Now, the sequential process it ignores concurrency, right? It can't completely ignore it because a sequence depends. The way you tell a correct sequence from a wrong sequence is that you have to refer back to the dependency, the expression of the dependency relations. Dependency relations include innate concurrency relations, and these concurrency relations that happen all at once or in any order, and it's the in any order that allows them to be sequenced, right? So you can't specify a sequence without understanding the dependency relations and the concurrent relations of the dependency relations, and also the sequential interpretation requires a sequential controller. And there must be a most primitive sequential controller, which cannot itself be expressed as a sequence of operations, a controlled sequence of operations. It has to be expressed some other way. So there are two forms of primitivity that sequential interpretation does not address, the concurrency that it's derived from and the primitive controller that it can't express. But you can't express the primitive controller in terms of Boolean logic, for instance, as a direct network of dependency relations. But Boolean logic also ignores, or not doesn't ignore it, it expresses it, but it can't handle it, right? It doesn't properly account the concurrency relations in its own dependency network. The result of that is that Boolean logic glitches. And so it's a defect in Boolean logic in my view. So what you really want is some primitive behaviors that don't glitch, right? To do the job without messing up, right? And the Boolean logic problem is fixed with the clock in the its registers, because there's a property of a Boolean logic network in that if you hold present the input and hold it stable enough long for long enough, the network will stabilize. All the glitches will flow through the network, and the network will stabilize to the correct answer of the presented input. And that's what the clock is all about, holding the network constant until it stabilizes to the correct output. And basically until the last glitch is propagated out of the network, and that the propagation of that last glitch is essentially what the critical path is about. So these things bothered me, right? So you have Boolean logic, it needs the clock. You have content, sequentiality needs this, a controller, which really doesn't address the source of its correctness, the source of its expression. I kind of saw these, sequentiality and Boolean logic as a kind of a Rube Goldberg mess, which I decided needed to be fixed.
Well, I think I'm glad you did. And so when I asked you what would be the practical applications, it seems like there are actually many, and they're fundamental, but there were some that stuck out in my mind. Could you share a one or two?
Well, I think it's a much more direct kind of model, right? I mean, you would describe things directly in terms of dependency relationships instead of indirectly in terms of sequences, right? So now the one point is that there can be an enormous amount of sequences, right? Because the concurrency relations can they can happen in any order, right? So there can be a whole bunch of different orders that specify each concurrency relations, and there's a bunch of current concurrency relations. So what you end up with is an enormous range of correct sequences of behaviors, but you end up with an enormous range of behaviors sequences that are not correct, right? So how do you tell the sequence, the correct ones from the incorrect ones? You have to refer back to the expression of the dependency relations with their inherent concurrent relations. So why not just do the dependency relations to begin with and let, the compilers figure out the sequences instead of trying to, having the humans try to do the sequences themselves and get them all wrong, not be able to
Speaking
figure out what's right and wrong.
of humans, Carl, and before we get back on to maybe some practical applications like Philippe was talking about, but pulling the camera back for a second, this feels to me like and has for a long time, but even more relevant today than ever, that there's been an inherent a default or a threshold or a limit to what Boolean logic would allow. That we're now starting to really encroach on as we get into real time and quantum environments where you have many things going on concurrently all the time, and interactively. And so that's what I feel like, if anything, null convention logic is starting to really come of age in terms of what it can enable at a much lower power and in a real time environment. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, we did demonstrate some of that in actual circuits in a couple of the companies. But the problem turned out in the end to be infrastructure and tools, right? So it turns out that it's a new language of computation competing with an old, really entrenched language of computation, right? So there's at this point, well, when I started back when, there were 40 years of tools, clock Boolean tools and so forth. And I think we had, at that time, we had a chance to catch up in the terms of tool development and getting ahead of the curve. But after 50 years of tool development, it's really hard to close that gap.
I would
So.
use the analogy for our listeners that don't understand fab and semiconductor manufacturing, that maybe it's similar, and I know you're going to say this is very rudimentary, but maybe it's similar to when you have the combustion engine, automobile industry globally, and suddenly you want to bring electric cars in, which is a completely different set of tooling and process and assembly. It's a complete, until you ask an entire industry to shift, which took a lot of time.
That's it. And I was just a little bitty startup, and I didn't really have the oomph to get over that hill.
Unless Carl, your itty bitty startup, as you say, like I like Mark's analogy, and it's appropriate, it sounds like. And yet, like, what if yours is neither, but yours is the flying car, and that's what we've been waiting for?
Well, yeah, I think that's it. So at my age here, I've kind of given up trying to, address the industry and actually get a company started or something. But this book is addressing the theory, right? So previously, I was always addressing practicality engineering, but this book is addressing the theory, and my assumption is that the theory will find its feet in the next decade or so.
Well, you keep writing the books. I got fresh legs. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, but now I'm talking about theory, so I'm not really addressing the practical implications at this point.
So, which is interesting also. So, in part of this conversation is fascinating because, being the kind of mind that you have, and the kind of information that you're bringing forward. When you and I were talking, you were mentioning how certain scientists didn't have their science acknowledged in their time, and my mind went to certain musicians and composers over the years didn't have their music acknowledged for the greatness that it was at the time. And in a way, sadly, you were saying that this could be what you're experiencing.
Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure it is actually. I mean, a lot of people experience that. I mean, that's nothing unique to me. It's just, like you say, I think I'm, too far ahead of the game to really be understood by most people, but they'll catch up with me, at some point. And I'm pretty sure of that.
So it's an interesting, you and I were having, didn't use the word, but a recalibration moment, or I was wanting to appreciate where you are, where you've been. And so as you've gone through life, I imagine that you've had different experiences of what you were going to do, and that has kept you going. And when certain things happened and other things didn't, you kept going with a new, I'm going to do this. And so here you are, and it may not be a company, and it may not be people acknowledging or even understanding, but you understand that they will. So what is the ultimate goal now for you?
Well, the ultimate goal for me now is to get the ideas, the latest book, the most complete statement I've been able to make of it so far, Get it out, get people looking at it, and leave as much evidence and documents and things laying around when I, my time comes up, that it'll take on a life of its own.
And that's why you keep writing.
That's partly why I keep writing, and I just had a conversation with my wife a few minutes ago. A real reason I keep writing is this is enormous fun.
Oh, wow.
It's enormous fun. I mean, fun figuring out new ideas, figuring out their connections, fitting them all together, figuring out how to talk about them. It's great fun. And that's a large, that's a big part of the reason why I keep doing it. It's just a lot of fun.
Wow. My hat's off to you for coming to that. And so potentially looking back on your career, did you know it was fun back then?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I've always had a good time trying to do what I, doing what I was trying to do. Yeah.
So it almost
I
doesn't
mean,
matter.
there's been a lot of frustration, with people that wouldn't get it, didn't want to get it, and wanted to, counter me, and and so forth. So there's been challenges and frustrations and so forth, but in large part, it's been a lot of fun.
Is there, and I'm so glad to hear that actually, and that really could be the end of a really great episode right here. Truly, truly. I mean, a show episode on the Life Changes show. Thankfully, we have a couple more minutes together, and if that is true, which it is. I hear it in you. And at the same time, with so much happening, whether it's AI or computing power or fresh young minds coming that have already been born with computers in their hands, so to speak, is there a possibility for an exponential leap, a quantum leap forward that could, I don't want to get you excited any more than you already are, but that like within a year or two, boom, I never thought this could be possible.
Well, I suppose that's possible, but well, I don't know. I mean, this is so, what I'm talking about is so different from the mindsets of most people out there that, and there's a few people out there that will understand exactly what I'm saying. But my part of my problem was a lot of the people that should have understood what I was saying, didn't quite get it, like the academic asynchronous community was kind of siloed, and I had my own silo, and I was, accepted with my own silo, but I couldn't break out of my silo and get other people to join me in my silo, so that was frustrating. So I finally decided, having an academic silo of my own wasn't quite what I wanted, but yeah, I suppose
Oops.
an exponential thing is possible, but my experience is gradual.
Mark, you're about to say something.
No, I was just saying it was hard when you're in those peer groups and everybody's talking concurrently. So, Talking
Nice. concurrently, right?
I have to say, Carl, you either m made an impression on Mark or you taught him well when he shared with me your work and went into what it was about and how important it is. And after all those years that he had retained all that and knew the importance of it and some of the specifics, it blew me away. I was impressed with both of you at the same time.
Well, I appreciate Mark's memory. Thank you, Mark.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's and again, it's inspiring me because I believe that part of the reason that I've been so early is because you and a lot of the teams that we were working with were so early. And on that note, with today's relevance, how do you see null convention logic applying to this AI revolution that we're all, trying to keep up with?
Well, I think okay. So the model is basically in terms of networks of dependency relations, and I think that's what AI is. I don't completely understand AI and the training and the networks and so forth, but I think that's largely what AI is networks of dependency relations. The dependencies are trained. So I think it can have a relevance, but I don't know exactly what that relevance is or what impact it might have.
So
That's part of what's been inspiring me and why I'm excited to be having this conversation today and to kind of reignite some of this dialogue.
Well, so as your book says, A Journey Through Computation, Natural and Human. So the human part is the conversation we've been having, is how to make certain logic and sequences and algorithms work or work better, et cetera. The natural part is the DNA aspect of it, that you're saying that this is actually modeled after that, but that didn't come first for you, right?
No, it didn't come first at all. And it's the metabolism, right? So there's a principle, a first principle that I'm relating to in developing the model. And that first principle is that differentnesses interact specifically with each other, transitioning into other differentnesses, right? So it's all about differentness very specifically interacting and transitioning under the differences. Right? And the differences can be what I call conditions, which would be like proteins in the cytoplasm of a cell, right? And the conditions are all different. They interact specifically, and it doesn't matter how they're associated, right? So they're in this boiling mixture of the cell, randomly interacting, but they randomly associating, but they interact specifically, and that specific interaction is what makes a computation in the chaos of the liquid. So that's where the model begins, and then from that I derive the behaviors, right? The kind of differentness, which is association differentness, right? The different place of a in a network, right? I derive that and go on from there. Yeah, so that notion of a computation in the chaos of the cytoplasm of a cell is where it all starts.
Interestingly, I, as you know, I studied computer science, and I didn't study biology, but I understood the biology better for some reason. And it's interesting how if God did it that way, then it would make sense that Carl says doing it God's way in the other way is makes sense. So.
Yeah, what makes the mathematicians think they invented computation anyway?
Well, everybody's got to think, I guess, what they got to think in the moment. But I am glad that you've been thinking and you've been having fun, and it's been fun for you to share with us, I trust. And speaking of why you write, actually, you've written a couple, many other things, but at least a couple books before this. But it, technically, as we close here, how long did it take to write this book in
Well,
reality?
I'm not actually, well, I've been, the first two books are actually parts working towards it, right? So,
Yes.
but once I gave up on my other pursuits and decided I was going to write the next book, I don't know, it has to be at least 4 years, maybe 5 years.
With 30 years of work behind it.
At
A
least 30 years
lifetime,
of work.
truly.
Yeah, really. And think of that. I'm sitting here for 5 years working on writing my next book. I just finish it, and shortly after that, Mark calls me. We hadn't talked in, maybe 20 years. And shortly after I finished the book, Mark calls me, says,
That's
"What you
amazing.
I've been waiting and waiting."
This is amazing. This has
Yeah.
been a lot of fun. And who would have thought, when we're talking about something that most of us will never understand, but I feel like we'll get to use, whether in my lifetime or not, more of your work, and that is my trust. A lifetime journey through computation, natural and human. Oh, I'm sorry, that's our title. Yours.
I think we need to change the title to A Fun Lifetime Journey Through Computation.
I think you're right.
This too can be fun. A Journey Through Computation, Natural and Human. Of course, there are two other books, Logically Determined Design and Computer Science Reconsidered. All of that can be found at carlfant.net. Carl is Karl and Fant is Fant, carlfant.net. And you'll also find a YouTube channel. Like, take a look at one of those. As a matter of fact, we have a video on our webpage for Carl Fant at the Life Changes Show. So take a click on that and see what you can get. Expand your mind. Carl, thank you so much for being with us today. What an absolute pleasure.
Okay, pleasure's mine. Thank you.
All the best to you.
Yeah.
Hope to connect someday in person.
Yeah, me too.
In the meantime, we had fun, and
Okay.
with that, we now have our Ask Dorothy segment. Oh, Mark, can I
Yes.
give you a before that, can I just say truly thank you? Thank you for, I mean, it's got to be you divinely inspired that you felt him finish the book and said, Filippo, Dorothy, what do you think? Let's have Carl on the show.
Like I said, it's a great honor, and it's been an inspiration all through. And I do think there's still more chapters to write, so I'm very much looking forward to what the future holds and having more fun.
And ha having more fun. Okay. And so it is. And with that, it's now time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
All right, thank you.
Thank you,
Go.
Prof. Dear Dorothy, this is Marianne. And as I have shared with you, I am very spiritual and I believe that God is helping us bring peace to the world. However, I have been working on bringing peace to Earth for over 50 years and I've lost patience. So now I am nervous and angry when it appears there is very little progress being made toward peace. How can I become more patient and thus calmer?
Dearest Marianne, it's incredibly meaningful that you've dedicated so much of your life to such an important cause, and your frustration is understandable. The work of bringing peace can feel overwhelming, especially when progress seems slow or imperceptible. Your deep commitment to peace shows that you truly care. But sometimes that intensity can lead to burnout or impatience, as it has done for you. We must remember that peace building is a long-term and collective journey, and its impact can often be subtle and gradual. In moments when the progress feels slow, do your best to focus on the small steps you're taking. Celebrate even the tiniest successes, whether it's a meaningful conversation, an act of kindness, or a shift in someone else's perspective. By focusing on the present actions rather than only the distant goal, you could find more peace in the process itself. Peace isn't a goal that can always be seen in linear terms. There are layers and complexities to it that might not always be visible to us in real time. If we could zoom out and see the full arc of history, we'd see that humanity has made significant strides, even though progress may sometimes feel slow. Consider the positive changes you've witnessed in your lifetime, things like human rights advancements, environmental awareness, and social justice movements. This broader perspective might help you find renewed faith. It's clear that you have a deep heart for peace and for the world's well-being. And please remember that every small act of peace you contribute is meaningful, even if the results aren't immediately visible. Peace begins in the heart, and by finding patience within yourself, you can continue to be a steady source of light for the world. And let's also remember how helpful it is to engage with like-minded people. Being part of a community with shared values and goals can help counter feelings of impatience or frustration. Connecting with others who share your vision for peace, whether through spiritual groups, peace organizations, or grassroots initiatives, can provide mutual support and fresh perspectives. And please remember that spiritual practices like prayer, meditation, or simply spending time in nature can help center your thoughts and emotions. Trust that your efforts are not in vain and that peace is unfolding in ways beyond what we can always see or measure. You have shared your belief that God is guiding this process, so let's trust that there is a larger plan unfolding. Even when progress seems imperceptible, your work is part of a divine timeline that may not always align with your own expectations or pace. Having faith that things will unfold as they are meant to, even if it's not immediate, can help you feel more patient and calm. Thank you, dear Marianne, for all you are doing to bring peace into the world.
I think what you're saying is that peace can exist concurrently with the chaos that we're all navigating these days.
Nice.
And if any of you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
Our performance guest comes to us and brings the rhythm of her native Cuba. She is a songwriter and a lead singer and dancer for the Yalil Guerra Orchestra. Welcome, Jamila Guerra Soto, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you so much. A pleasure and honor to be here with you.
Hello, everybody. Such a pleasure to have you on. It's so interesting because we had the pleasure of being introduced to your brother by Marina Manukian, who's a friend and a past performance guest. And then we had the pleasure of having your brother and his original music on the show as a performance guest, Yalil Guerra, who's now Dr. Yalil Guerra.
Yes.
Congratulations to him. So then he introduced us to you a while back, and it's been hard to try and coordinate because you're singing and doing things on this TV show and that TV show and this festival and that. So you're finally here, and
yeah,
it's great to have you. And I have to say that people say they do this and they do that, and I saw that you're a dancer, and I thought, well, how does that apply to the show? But then when I watched you on video, boy, are you dancing. You're dancing all over the place. Where does that come from for you?
Well, I studied classical ballet first in art schools in Cuba, and then later I studied, you know, music, singing, acting in another art school in Havana, Cuba. So I love to you know, to sing, dance, act, host a show. So I enjoy it a lot. Mm-hmm.
You're very engaging. So on the different shows that I saw, like, you don't stop. Like, the music is in you even if it's not playing.
I love music. You know, it's one of my passions. It's incredible. You know, when I listen to music, when I perform, you know, I feel so, you know, happy and you know, to be able to do what I want to do, to perform, to be in front of the audience and express and bring them our Cuban and Latin music, culture, dance, teach them how to dance. You know, I enjoy a lot, you know, to be in touch with the people. Yes. You know, I'm very open, very, you know, open to the contact, you know, communications. I love that. Yes.
So There's so much I want to talk about with you because you just mentioned so many different things about the culture, of course, music and the culture for that matter, and also family and music. So let's talk first about family and music, and then we'll get to hear something. So you come from a very musical family, right?
Yes, my parents were a very popular duet in Cuba, you know, famous. So since I was a child, I was listening to their repertoire. I learned with them how to sing in Japanese, in Arabic, in many languages. Just listen to them, you know. Since I was a child, so I started to perform at 6 years old in with my parents a show in Cuba. So we toured the whole country. So and then at the same time I started to study in art school. So in the summer we toured with our parents in Cuba and also. In many countries of Europe and Latin America as well with our show. So it's, you know, to be on a stage, it's my passion. I feel, you know, I'm in ecstasy. I love it. Yes.
It shows. And by the way, there are so many things I can mention about your career, but for you to be invited to perform at the Oscars Governor's Ball and be the very first Cuban artist to do so, congratulations, along with many other things.
Thank you.
PBS shows, etc. Weekend in Havana. Okay, so before we get too more into all of that, we're going to get to hear a song did you write this with your brother or you, and who wrote Fiesta?
Yeah, Fiesta, my brother wrote it, yes.
Okay, and tell us, could you Fiesta, tell us?
Yes, it's the translation is party. So Cubans are very joyful, you know, very open, extrovert. Their culture is like that. You know, we have the sun 360 days, you know, in our head. So we are very, very expressive. So Fiesta is like an invitation to enjoy life, to dance, to listen to music, to be in contact with the people, visit your family, visit your friends, and create a party, even though you don't have anything to, for example, a birthday, just have, you know, a fiesta party, you know, and enjoy the simple things that we have in Cuba. Even though we didn't have, you know, enough food or enough, you know, material things, we loved, you know, to communicate with the people, to touch the people. This is very, very important for us, you know, to talk and embrace them and kiss them, you know. And Fiesta is an invitation to enjoy the life, you know, what we have, even though it's little. And with that little thing, you can be happy. You can create a party in your house, you know, with your friends, with your family. So it's important for Cuban culture to have a fiesta, to have party. And when you visit the country, you can feel that even though with the struggles they are having and the problems, they are survivors, and they enjoy life, you know, with these simple things, you know. And that song is a reflection of our culture.
Very nice. Well, it's time to have a fiesta here on the Life Changes show. Thanks to Jamila Guerra Soto and her song Fiesta here on the show.
celebración que alegra los corazones, armonía y hermandad para todos por igual. No importa de dónde vengas, solo hacia dónde vas, que la vida te sonría, a ti te invito a bailar. No mires hacia atrás, traigo un canto de esperanza que a todos les traiga paz. Goza siempre de la vida y a ti te invito a bailar.
Partes y hacia todas partes voy. Arte soy entre las artes, en el monte, monte soy. Todo es hermoso y constante, todo es música y razón, y todo como el diamante, antes que luz, es carbón.
Jamila Guerra Soto and Fiesta, pre-recorded here, shared on the Life Changer Show. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
I want to spell your name for everybody so they could more easily find you. Jamila is Y-A-M-I-L-A and Guerra, G-U-E-R-R-A. Soto is S-O-T-O. You will find her on many social medias, links. We have them at the Life Changes page for Jamila, but you could go directly to her website, jamilaguerra.com, and find all her links there. Is there a social that you use more? Is it Instagram or Facebook that we should share right now, or Twitter?
We can, I have a lot of pages in Instagram, but the one I use the most is Jamila Jalil Guerra Orchestra. It's Y-A-M-I-L-A-Y-A-L-I-L-G-U-E-R-R-A Orchestra. is the one I use the most.
Very good. We will put that up on our website as well. And so you said so much about culture and music in your culture. Salsa, obviously, very important, at least to you, for sure, right?
Yes, yes. Yes, for me, yeah.
What to you distinguishes, like, what is it about the rhythm that you like to introduce to the audiences of the world that aren't familiar or that don't get to experience all the time, like when you were growing up? What is it that you're bringing about the music?
I bring most of the time Cuban music. You know, Cuba had given to the world a lot of rhythms like salsa, but salsa is son cubano, is the origin of the salsa, is son cubano. Also, I love cha-cha-cha rhythm. It was created also in Cuba. Mambo as well.
Wow.
Rumba, guaguancó. So I like to sing and dance all those rhythms. Each one has its own characteristic singing and dancing. Every rhythm has their specific steps. When you dance salsa, it's different. When you dance cha-cha-cha, when you dance mambo, rumba, guaguancó. And this is something incredible from Cuban culture, because every rhythm has its own specific steps. For example, the Afro-Cuban rhythms, you know, every African orisha, African scent, has its own specific steps as well. So it's a richness and a variety that when I perform, you know, these songs, these rhythms, I feel very, very lucky to be able to give that to the audience, you know, to have the opportunity when people, you know, book me for an event. I love to bring and to be as an ambassador of Cuban music, dance, and culture through my performance. And I enjoyed, you know, all of them, you know.
Well, you certainly do a lot of them. And speaking of what you're bringing to the world, you're bringing more albums, more shows, and more projects. So you have a couple coming up that are very exciting, potentially opportunities for people to not only get online and see you, but also see you live. Tell us about those real quick.
Yes, I have in February two dates. We're going to perform to the City of Commerce and February 7th and February 8th, 2 days. And other things are coming, you know, but I will post them in social media, you know, next month.
Oh, okay. Then I know things. Yeah. I know things that we're not supposed to say, I guess. Oh, and they're so good too. All right. We'll wait until you post or you let us know and we can share with our audiences.
Thank you.
In the meantime, so yes, I didn't know Cuba, that all of those rhythms originated in Cuba. So now I know. Thank you for educating me on that. And so not only rhythms, but isn't Cuba also known for its, because I'm leading into the next song here that you chose for us, for its romantic aspects?
Yes.
A danzón.
It's another rhythm created in Cuba, danzón. And this is a song arranged and produced by my brother Jalil. The lyrics is by a Cuban female poet, Dulce María Loinás. And the name of the song is "If You Love Me, You Have to Love Me as I am, or you have to love me whole, you know. It's very interesting, the lyrics. So we wanted to have this song with this Cuban poet that she was very, very important for our little show as well. So I enjoy it.
Before we played it, so I played it a couple times and enjoyed it, of course. And is there a lyric in there, something like, I was trying to understand it, wrinkles and all, or something like that? You got to love my wrinkles too, or something? Is that
possible?
Yes,
you have to love my wrinkles. You have to love me as I am. If I'm white, black, yellow, whatever. So if you're going to love me, you have to love me as I am. You know, you have to accept me. It's
And
that you have to love me with my shadows,
yes,
and with my lights as well.
Wow.
So it's very, very interesting that poem.
So this is a Jamila Guerra, a pre-recorded singing this song. Si me quieras, quierame
si me
entera.
Entera.
Oh, mm-hmm. Si me quieres. Quierame.
Si me quieres. Quiereme entera.
Entera. Okay, here on the Life Changes show now. Jamila Guerra Soto. Wow, quiereme así.
Yes, very sensual.
Yes.
Yeah, Cubans are sensual as well.
What a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you on stage dancing, and I'll be dancing in the audience, I'm sure, enjoying your music, or yours and your brother's. So all the best to both of you. Again, Jamila Guerra, YamilaGuerra.com. And what was that Instagram that you wanted to give out?
YamilaGuerra Orchestra. And also in Jamila Guerra in Facebook, in TikTok, Jamila_Guerra. In YouTube at Jamila Guerra. I'm very active in social media.
Yes, you are. And it's a lot of fun. You are a lot of fun. My goodness. All the best to you and to your brother and to your whole family, Jamila.
Thank you so much for inviting me. And I send you hugs and kisses to you and to all your audience.
And besos to you.
Besos.
And with that big hug and kiss, and thank you to Jamila Guerra Soto, our performance guest, and another big thank you to our interview guest, Carl Fant. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.